So the thing is, this is one of the important concepts that a person gets this ruined because he's raised here among the guy. Because that's their idea. Their idea is that either you're very good and you're very happy with yourself, or else you're bad and you're guilty. That's their immature, infantile, simple way of ethics, which Chazal recognizes being false and being harmful. There's a more mature way.
So
the mature way is
what?
That's right. You have to change. It's not easy. But the mature way is where a person recognizes, like I said before, that there is a distance. He has to be able to study perfection without guilt. Not forget about yourself. Forget about yourself. Just study perfection per se. And then you will as you in your mind, certain inroads are made just by the study of perfection. You know you're no good. Forget about yourself. So you're no good. You can't tolerate the fact that you're not good. You have to be able to tolerate it. Can't be that egocentric. So you're not so good. Yeah, the whole world is revolved around you. So you're not so good. You should follow. Once you see the tremendous egocentricity is involved in that other way. Really? I mean, what's so important? Well, why should a person assume he's so important? The Ram says even the species of man per se is not that important. And the mind of well, much less one individual. But the person caters to a person's egocentricity. This whole idea of he can't be guilty, he has to be perfect. Well, not so perfect. So what? But the point is, the person has to be able to recognize what perfection is. Be a little objective for a minute. Forget about yourself. You're not so good. That's so terrible. Then, by having those imprinted in his mind, what the real values are, as he goes through life's experiences, he will naturally be able to move towards the good, slowly, step by step. But the value system is very important. And therefore, when a person involves himself in nonsensical pursuits, so we're not saying he should stop, like we said, he can't stop immediately, but he should. There's a way to involve himself. He should not give it the value. Shouldn't give it the value. Al tismach eshel gilbam, mastulam shimalei yispiv schok ba'olam hazeh. That's what Chazal said. If you're in Malei Tzchok, or if you're really filled with Simcha over these things, then it's a value. Then it's bad. So you should do it. You're not on the level to remove yourself totally. But the value should not be there. Nochas Deis Perik Beis Halacha Dalit. The Rambam capitulates the whole memra over here. Lolam Yabadam Bishika Vlay Dabur, just like this over here. And then he says, Achem Bidivre Tabidivre Chachma Yud Divre Adam Atim. The Inyoneim Merubin. Lushitiv Chacham Ramur Laolam Yeshan Adam Latamido of Derech Kitzar. Avalimoy Advar Merubin. The Inyan Muat Harezu Sichlus. Valzen Emma Kibach Alon Barov Inyan Vakolk Silver of Dvar. I mean, what really is the importance of that? What's so terrible if a person speaks at length? Besides, you see that one of the ways you kind of tell one of them dvarim is a riches vasayim. Speak out an inyan, talk it out, so you get to the concept.
Look at the Rashbam compared to Rashi and say. What? You look at the Rashbam compared to Rashi and say, boy, the guy he spoke.
Okay. So what if it's extraneous? I mean, what is so terrible? The question is, what is so terrible if a Rebbe explains something and speaks at length? As a matter of fact, the Rebbe one time said that Reb Chaim was very long-winded, he says. That's Reb Chaim would talk and talk out the Svar, and the Rebbe also talks. He listens to the Rebbe and talks it out. When you talk it out, you get it more perfected. You have to Riches Vasayim is one of the ways to become a Torah. Yeah, now the Kitzur, you're not going to get anything. The mind works together with the dibur. Mind and dibur are like one unit. So when you're working, you have to. The Rashi says over there. Rashi says on the Memchas Dvarim, they should be motziyan bepeh. Sheirichas v'sayim means that she hey motziyan bepeh. What does it mean she motziyan bepeh? Doesn't just mean you should think and then be motzi bepeh. It means that being motzi bepeh is a part of the process of thinking. So therefore, as you think, you should express it in dibur. You'll get closer to the true definition, to the more precise definition. So you have to talk at length. The Rebbe's not going to talk at length. This is Talmud is not going to get anything out of it. So what's so terrible about talking at length? Well, why is it such an important thing? You should speak briefly and concisely. And what is lo and yishal and adam the talmida derech katzar? What does that mean? Yeah. I don't think what it means is la'olam yeshana odom l'tamido of derech ketzara means that it has to do with the quantity of words, less words. No, I mean, you have to explain to a Talmud the way he understands it, and if it takes more words, you have to use more words. What it means, like, listen to the Rambam. Rambam's like this. The Rambam says la'olam yabadam b'shika talach adava peg bez lachda. Fine. Yeah. What is the Rambam really? First of all, it's a funny thing. Like the Rambam seems to say, "V'chein b'divrei Torah, u'divrei Chachma, yu divrei Adam Ma'atim." Implication is, you should even minimize your speech over there, right? Not good to talk even in divrei Torah too much. First of all, what kind of a comparison is this? I mean, it's ridiculous. V'chein b'divrei Torah Chachma yu divrei. No, on the contrary, divrei Torah divrei Chachma, it should be much. It should be a lot. That's the area you should be involved in. Dibur is just an involvement. Ram puts in the same class. Then he says, fool has a lot of chalom, dreamer, dreams a lot of things and. An interesting thing what he says about the dream, but anyways, the thing is that's an interesting. I tell what he means about the dream. It's an interesting point. But what is the main idea he's getting at over here? What's the main idea that he's getting at over here? It would seem to be contradictory if the Isser is to be involved. So in Divrei Torah, that's where you should speak. What does the Rambam mean? Yes. I don't think it's a matter of ego. I think what the Rambam means, like, you see the whole purpose of a person. Why is the Rambam mentioning this? Because the whole purpose of a person is really one thing, and that is to partake of the abstract ideas, partake of the true ideas. Okay. Now, the thing is like this: that a person, what prevents a person from partaking of the true ideas? The other part of his nature, the emotional part of his nature. Okay, so that's why a person should veer away from that area. But then he says, even in Divrei Chachma also, a person should try to speak briefly. What he means by briefly over here is, I think, is precisely. Precise definition. You see? Because a precise definition is really when you take something and you boil it down and you define it precisely, then you hit, you actually that's the essence of the existence. Good. Now, therefore, that's what the Gemara means. Lo'olam yishana odom l'talmido b'derech tzara. And it's like this: v'im avalimay advam rubin v'inyan muad harezu sichlus. Sichlus means it's foolish. What does sichlus mean? Sichlus means that the part he's involved in the part of the mind that has to do with the part of the mind that avoids precise abstract definition is the same part of the mind that is the nonsensical. In other words, it's the descriptive part of the mind. The descriptive part of the mind which is not in line with precise definition, with abstract definition, is the same part of the mind that's tied to the taivas and to the, everything else. It stems from the imagination. It's because the person gives reality to the imagination, and that's why, in order to explain something, he has to keep explaining and explaining. Why does he explain so much? Because he can't hit the abstract essence that only the mind's eye can see. So therefore, he has to deal with the images that embody the idea. And he has to argue, present convincing arguments, and speak at length, because the physical objects multiply. But the abstract concept is always the most basic, the most condensed, because it's the one underlying idea which includes everything. So that's why the Rambam says, Avalimoya Dvar Marubin Vainyan Muat Harezu Sikhlas. Sikhlas means it's foolishness. One second. So Sikhlas means it comes from the same part of the mind that's involved in nonsense. That's why this is all one Rambam, really. Because the Rambam is just telling you one idea, that man's essence is abstract thought. That's his essence. Now, therefore, he should minimize those areas which are not involved in this essence. And even when he's involved in Chachma, he must be able to remove himself from from that part of the mind, the imagination, which prevents him from seeing the reality of the abstract idea and convinces him. See, when a person uses descriptive argument, why does he use descriptive argument? Because he doesn't really believe in the abstract concept. What he believes in is the physical representations of the abstract, you see. And since he believes in the physical representations of the abstract, he has to deal with all these representations that he has in front of him. But a person who defines just deals with the one abstract idea. The one abstract idea is always the simplest, the shortest, has to be the shortest, because it's the one, the abstract, encompasses all the different cases. So that's why Chazal say that when a person teaches his Talmud, he should teach him b'derech kitzara. What does it mean, b'derech kitzara? It means he should teach him the precise, abstract formulation. The Rambam's not talking about the yamayit b'dibor over here. The Rambam means he shouldn't speak a lot in Torah. It's ridiculous. If he has to, it says in Perek Shishi that one of the ways mem chesdron shonik is meant is a riches vasayim. On the contrary, you have to speak it out. That's why the Rav said Reb Chaim would speak it out again and again, and every time you talk it out, you get more closer to the precise formulation. What it means is that the final formulation has to be derech kitzara. And if it isn't derech kitzara, then it shows you that the nonsensical part of the mind is really involved. So what the Gemara means is that that's what it says, Arezu Sichlus. So when you teach a Talmud, you shouldn't try to teach him in a descriptive way. You shouldn't teach him in a descriptive way. See? This, by the way, is a folly of the today's educational system. Because what they do is they teach children, they use all these different examples. They use the audio-visual and all these different methods. Certainly there is a place for it before, when the child is at a certain stage. You need it because he doesn't know what you're talking about. But the movement should be away from that, really. It should be a movement away from the audio-visual. Movement should be towards the abstract. That's the direction you should take. You have to start off with the concrete, but it should be towards the abstract. And that's what they fail, because they're satisfied as long as a student understands it descriptively. They're satisfied, makes sense to them. That's wrong. See, that's shtus, that's sichlus. As long as you didn't get down to the final formulation, the most precise formulation of the abstract, then you haven't really then you really have a lot of sichlus involved. See, it's an interesting thing. It says kibach alayim b'roiv inyan. What does it mean, kibach alam barov inyan? The dream, a person's dream has many different inyanim. If you study dreams, you'll find out that there's always one idea behind a person's dream. One singular idea. But the representations are many. Many representations. It's represented again and again and again in different forms, in different forms. Why? Because dreams are the language of the emotions. Dreams are the language of the emotions. And the emotions are attached to every single physical representation or image that that the person goes through or that goes through in his mind. That's what it is. Ki boach aloim b'roi vinyan. The kol ksil b'rov devara. And the fool speaks in many things. Why? Because the pasuk tells you that the fool is really not that far away from the dreamer. See? Because the dream life is the life of the emotions. It's not the conceptual life. It's the descriptive emotional life. And a fool lives in that world. So when a fool talks, he can't hit the nail on the head in terms of precise definition. So he has to speak in a lot of, talk a lot. He has to keep talking a lot. With examples and things, and you know what I mean? This and that. He keeps talking and talking. Why does he talk so much? Because he's tied to the world of description. Like the dream world. But the pasuk, the reason why the Rambam used this pasuk is because the Rambam wants to show you that for a person to perfect himself, there's only one perfection. What is the perfection? The world of the totally abstract. And that is the most precise formulation. So everything, that's why the Rambam's like this. He says, first of all, a person should remove himself from all the nonsensical areas of his life. And he should only be involved in the area of thought. And even the thought should be refined. You should refine away from the thought all the nonsense. So that you find yourself ultimately only in the world of the pure abstract. That's when you reach the highest level. That's what the Rambam means. If Talmud doesn't understand something, you'll convince him descriptively, give him descriptions. You're right. Convince him, that's not good. He's supposed to give him the precise formulation, the precise definition. It's between the two points. From the description, you go to the definition, simply because all our knowledge is based upon the senses. So you see? But it should be towards the direction of the abstract. So the realm comes like this. Of course, the Rambam, if a person knows what abstract thought is, there's no reason to tell him to do it. That's what the Rambam says. When the Rambam says, it means that he's saying is, why should he teach his Talmud Derech Ktzara? In order that the Talmud should really be in the world of the abstract. In other words, the whole purpose is to be in the world of the abstract. And anything, if you're in the world of description, you're not in the world of the abstract. The world of description is the world of many different symbols and many different things. The world of the abstract is most precise and okay. The person with my situations that occurred were a party or a chasna, that somebody wanted to sing a song in Arabic, even if the ideas of the song were very good, because they praise some good or good characteristics, he says, courage or generosity, he says, which comes from the part that is good, or they will talk praise the yayin, shevach hayayin. Shevach hayayin, of course, is like the extension of shevach habore, shevach hayayin. Okay. Mamchen al kach, so people object to that. In b'chol ofen shel machor, they object vehemently. See, and they will not allow you to listen to it. They won't allow you to listen to it. However, if the person sang that song, or the piyut in Hebrew, then they won't object. He says, even though the song in Hebrew has bad ideas, he says, and this is outright foolishness. He says, because the speech should not be determined by whether it's good or whether it's bad. It should not be determined by the language, but it should be determined by the content, the ideas. That if the idea is a good idea, we should be obligated to say it, sing it, in whatever language it might be. And if the Indian is bad, then you should not say it, no matter what language it is. He says, but according to what I understand it, he says, There's one more differentiation. That if, for instance, you have a choice between two songs that praise Taiva, he says, and one of them is in Hebrew, one of them is in Arabic, he says it's better, Arabic is better, because Hebrew really is a language that should be reserved for Kedusha. Certainly, if you use a pasuk of the Torah, he says, or from Shir Hashirim in that inyan, he says, then it's asur already. He says, because he says there's an isser to use divrei nevuah or divrei Torah in a bad way, in a bad way, attached to a bad idea as a song. It's an interesting thing. From this Rambam, you get a heter. Because Rav Moshe in the Sefer says he doesn't know what the heter is really, to use psukim for song. And the Chazal, Daf Kuf Aleph from Aleph and Sanhedrin, Gemara says that if anyone that uses any song, not allowed to use Shir Hashirim for a song or anything. So tell him anything. You're not allowed to make songs out of psukim in the Torah. And Rashi says, and the plain pshat in the Gemara is not like the Rambam. The plain pshat in the Gemara is, it says, Shehatorah Chogerasak, and the Torah, so to speak, puts on the sackcloth and comes before God and said, Asa uni bonai kikino shem enagnin boreke. That my children may be like a harp. So a musical instrument. So the Gemara says, so what should they do? So it says they should be Osek and Torah, Ad Chasanas, they should be. That's what the Gemara says. It shouldn't, there's nonsense. So, shush. But the Rambam apparently learned the Gemara not to be against if the shear is a if the shear is a shear that represents a true idea, then the Rambam was okay. So the Rambam says only usher if you use the pasuk in a way that is that as a shear it means in a bad way, not just the shear. That's what the Rambam learned. So then according to the Rambam, Rashi holds his usher. Rashi holds his usher in any type of shear is usher. You're not allowed to take a pasuk and make a shear out of it. But the Rambam it seems holds that the only time it's usher is if you take it and you take the pasuk and you put it into a shear which has a wrong idea, bad idea. Otherwise, Rambam will be like, "Does that have to really? Really, does that have to come out?" Okay.
What about like our question?
Rambam. Really is talking about a certain emotion, I think, that is still prevalent today. Not that I've studied, maybe it's not to the Arabic, but the point is, what the Rambam is talking about is that a person should use, people will object to a song if it's in English and it expresses true ideas. They'll feel that that's not right. It's in Yiddish, I mean, Hebrew, okay. Even Yiddish is even better. And it's definitely good. Beyond question. If it's in Yiddish, you made it into the Yiddish, beyond question. But the thing is that the Rambam says, I mean, it's basically a stupid emotion. Yeah. You should judge it according to the ideas, not according to the language. Yeah. The emotion is still prevalent today. People didn't change their mind.
No.
According to the Rambam, if you're composing a song, so the main thing should be the idea, and you should use the language as a vehicle. The language is a vehicle, so you should use the vehicle, which is best. That's it. Okay. There's something interesting about the Rambam. What's interesting about what the Rambam said over here? Parenthetically, let something out, which is very interesting. Lashon HaKodesh. About Lashon HaKodesh. That Lashon HaKodesh was intended only, that's why I have Lashon HaKodesh. Say, what is Lashon HaKodesh? Lashon HaKodesh really represents the idea. The whole concept of Lashon HaKodesh represents the idea. That's why the Rambam says Nemora, why it's called Lashon HaKodesh. It's because there's no dirty words there, the Rambam says. So, what was the idea? The concept is that there's a special language which is designated among the nations as a language which a person should use for the good. Language of the good. See? That's what the that's the concept of Lashon HaKodesh. So the Gemara says, really, it's a response to what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that a person should have two different mouths. You learn why? Because how is it possible? How is it possible? Right? So the answer is no. Two. Then the Gemara says no. It'd be worse, because then he
he'd never come to realization.
It'd be worse even. Because then but the answer is, what is the what has the Torah do it? The Torah did it very simple. It's the same mouth, but there should be two different lashanas. Two different lashanas. The lashon which has to do with the important things, and the lashon which is designated for chulin. Interesting thing. So I don't know if it's so good that Mary Tzvah don't speak Lashon HaKodesh. It depends what they talk about. If they, according to the Rambam, they're kind of like this, that on the contrary, that it's better to speak, you should not speak Lashon HaKodesh, the person's doing a veris. That really breaks the whole designation of Lashon HaKodesh. Breaks the whole designation. Exactly. Then they should speak Arabic. Involved in things that varma asurim and znus and whatever, they should not be. It's an issa. It's a worse issa.
What was the language?
Okay, that's what the Ram says. That's the concept of Lashon HaKodesh. That's the idea of Lashon HaKodesh. So what do they do in time of David HaMelech? The answer is that they understood Plishtim didn't speak Lashon HaKodesh, they understood other languages. A person, it's worse. A person should have Lashon HaKodesh should be set aside, designated specifically for Dvorim, Chashuvim, that part of speech which is which a person should use to improve himself. Yeah, the Rambam wrote in Arabic. You see, the Rambam wrote himself in Arabic. That goes back to what we said before, that a person should try to use a language that's only a vehicle. So the main thing is the content, is the ideas. So if you think you're going to get the ideas across in the best possible way, in Arabic or in English, then you should use those languages. Those are the languages you should use. Lashon HaKodesh is tied to the whole concept of that perfection lies with the Dibur. The Chivon says, Karna Lashon Hara, the Rambam says, the Chelek HaDibur Aser, Hareini Mevaro. Now the Rambam says, since we discussed Lashon Hara and the part of the, in that area, that category of speech which is prohibited, he says, I will explain it. Here you are in an unbelievable blindness. Vu Avera Chamura B'Yoser, Shodam Nichsho Botamit. This is the Avera, which is the most Chamur, that a person always, Lashon Hara, a person always is stumbling in it. And befrat what Chazal say, that avak lashon hara, ain't not a mitzvah man b'chol yom, that nobody can avoid avak lashon hara. He says, halavai they should be able to avoid lashon hara itself. He says, now what is lashon hara? He says, lashon hara is telling about the faults of people and reducing the stature of people in any way that it should be, any type of reduction of stature, no matter what. And even if it's true, because Lashon Hara doesn't really mean that a person should tell a lie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He said that's called Motzei Shemra. But Lashon Hara is really to talk, to debase a person in his actions that he definitely did. And a person who says that is a chote, a sinner. And a person who hears it, who listens to it, is a chote. They said that Lashon Hara kills three people. The one who speaks, and the one who hears, and the one that they're talking about. And they said the one that receives it even more than the one that... more than the one that says it, yeah.
We said what?
Of course, there's no guilt attached. Okay. Now he says, what is avak Lashon Hara? Avak Lashon Hara is rimuz, where a person intimates b'mumei ha'adam, in the defects of other people, mibli la'amam b'fersh, without spelling them out clearly.
I remember what the
Shlomo says, that a person that hints or alludes
b'mumei ha'adam,
the Mishan Rames, and the one that's alluding demonstrates or gives the appearance that he doesn't know what people understood from what he said, and that he really didn't intend to say that, but he was he had in mind something else. He says, "Amar," he says, and he says, "I'm only playing around. I'm not serious." That's a vak lashon hara. Rama says, "That's a vak lashon hara."
What is that? Kain ish Rama Esrael.
Rama Esrael. He fools his friend, and he says,
"I didn't do it. I was only fooling around."
Yeah, he fools him. He fools his arrow. I was only fooling around. Yeah. Meantime, he killed the guy. Meantime, he killed the guy with his arrow. So that's what the Rama says. Of course, what's the difficulty here? The difficulty over here is that I would say that that's worse than regular lashon hara. I mean, no, wouldn't you say it's worse than, I'd say it's worse than regular lashon hara.
Why? There's no intent here.
No, on the contrary. He says, Kainish Rimas Re'eu V'omar Halo Mesachikani. What does Rima mean? Ramos. He fools him. He tricks him. He fools him. So he really does intend to. He really has intention. See? Look at lashon hara. Ve'yo samarames Mare she'ena yodea ma she'evina medvar. He says, and the one who's talking gives the appearance that they don't know what he's. V'shehulo neschavim l'kach, ela neschavim l'nyanacha. What is he lashing? Ve'yos hamarames mare she'ena yodea. Does he really not know ma she'evina medvar? It would seem that he really knows.
Yeah, he does know.
Oh, so this is quite a vicious level.
It seems to be that Avak is more than...
Yeah, like it should be like the Shomayah. Just like the Shomayah himself.
Avak, you're fooling yourself. You think
Kabbalah is worse. So this should be worse. It should be worse.
Avak should be worse than regular.
Yeah, Avak should be worse than regular. Avak should be worse than regular.
He may know, but he doesn't expect
that. And the Gemara says that Shloshet Vam ain't other mitzvah man b'chol yom. Nobody can avoid this. An interesting thing. I'll say these three things. You should know that's an interesting thing. Though. What are the three things really? What are these three things that nobody can get away from, nobody can avoid every day? There's a reason why Chazal picked that issue. We'll get into it a little bit. But let's understand what it means over there first. What's the answer to this? What's the answer? The answer is that the Chazal are talking, the Rambam's talking about a certain state of mind where he really is, it's really subconscious. Chazal talking about a subconscious state of mind. It's not really conscious. Real conscious would be a Russia. You can't say, it's a real Russia, got it, Contrary, it's more effective. That way lashon hara is more effective. Because if you come out with outright lashon hara, it's less effective. Because people say, he's talking against him. He probably has something he isn't talking against him. If you do it in a concealed way, it's the worst lashon hara. You really destroy the guy. Much worse. But Chazal are talking about there's a certain twilight zone there between the unconscious and the conscious. It's like a subconscious thing. That's avak lashon hara. That's einar mitzvah mein b'chol yom. Because the unconscious instincts will always somehow or other they'll get through that state. That the borderline, once it hits the conscious already, they won't you can control it. But before the conscious, they're gonna escape. And they escape in this area, this disguised form. See, it doesn't mean that the disguised form stems really from the mental state. That's why it's kiyora chitzim. Over there, Kanish Rimas Rev. What it means is like the guy is playing around, but there's a subconsciously he knows that he's playing around. There may be somebody may be sitting over there. He may kill him with his arrows. Kanish Rimas Rev. Same thing. He fools. He can't say he doesn't consciously fool. He's really fooling himself more than anybody else. But the thing is that the expression comes out in a way that it's disguised. The reason why it's disguised is not because he intends so much to fool the other person. It's disguised because he's fooling himself really. That's why it's disguised. The disguise is because he's fooling himself. It's a subconscious expression. Okay? It's an interesting chazal. The Gemara says that there are three things that the person can't escape. The person cannot escape. What are the three things?
The three things are hira avera.
Yes.
Iyun tefila. Iyun tefila, and lashon hara. Okay, what is it's an interesting thing? What is iyun tefila? I mean, hira avera. Okay, it's impossible because it's an instinctual thing, and no matter how great he is, it's going to cross his mind in some way or another.
Where's that Gemara?
Gemara's daf kuf samach dalet on the base.
Where?
Hira avera means hira avera. All right, that's bad thoughts. Iyun tefila and lashon hara. What is iyun tefila? It's an interesting thing. Rashi says, Rashbam ready, right? Rashbam says, iyun tefila yesh mefarshim shel achash espalel don belibo. It's an unbelievable shot. Don belibo she yeshalom lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu scharo v'yasa HaKadosh Baruch Hu tzrochav v'yishma tefilosa l'fi she espalel b'kavana. The person after he davens feels that God will listen to what I demanded, and of course I was followed properly with kavana, so God's going to listen to what I asked. See, iyun tefila. So Taisus says, what do you mean? He says, not everybody thinks that way. Not everybody thinks that way. The Gemara says a person shouldn't do that, because a person who does that is going to be very disappointed. You'll find his tefillahs aren't working out the way he thinks they should. So he says, Pesach Dimshah. Pesach means that the person can't be Mayan in his tefillah. It means the person loses kavanah. It's impossible for a person to go through the tefillahs without losing kavanah somewhere along the line. So Pesach is distracted. He's distracted. But the what's the pshat in the Rashbam? Pshat is that, of course, not on a conscious level, again. It's not on a conscious level. But it means that subconsciously he feels he davened well, and reward. God will reward me the reward. Okay? That's the ego. That's the egocentricity of man. So really, it's a hura avera means the taivas. The taivas. Some thought about the taivas have to
take place.
Yeah, and hira. And then also the egocentricity, that he feels that somehow or other he's tied in pretty close to the Creator, or certainly a lot closer than other people, and that his will be done. Whatever he wants will be done. And the third thing is lashon hara. So Gemara says lashon hara, so gadaita. What do you mean? A person can avoid lashon hara? That's certainly possible. Ella avak lashon hara. What is avak? Because it's the subconscious. It's impossible to avoid it because it's the subconscious expression of man's aggressive instinct. Man's aggressive. Man's aggression towards somebody else. Beautiful chazal, huh? It's three things.
Three areas.
The aggression, the instinctual, the sexual, the instinctual, and the aggression. And also the egocentric. Interesting thing. Those three components, you can't escape a mild form, at least, of their expression. Impossible. Fantastic chazal.
Every day. Young
one? I just want to clarify, I think, a point that we spoke about last week. That I think is very important because it has to do with the essence of Yadus. You see, it's we spoke about the pasuk al tifnu el ha'elilim, and Chazal say that you shouldn't be involved in has to do with being involved in like entertainment, the nonsensities of life. And the question strikes you: I mean, when you see that pasuk, what does that have to do with al tifnu el ha'elilim? Really, al tifnu el ha'elilim is really avodah zarah. What does that have to do with avodah zarah? And really, most people don't understand when, like the Rambam says, that the main thing of the Torah is the obliteration of Avodah Zarah. That's the essence of the Torah. You feel, I mean, what's really so important about that? It's something from the primitive Avodah Zarah, something from the bygone past. And what does it really have to do with today's life? It's not really very practical today. But if that's the essence of the Torah, it must really strike at the core of human existence in terms of human perfection. What is so important? We always read the Torah about the obliterating of Avodah Zarah. What's so important about it? And why is Al Tifnu Al Alilim an Isser, which is that you shouldn't really be involved with entertainment? We mentioned the the Teisva says in Shabbos, it would mean like going to a movie or things like that. Al tifno lo leilim, al tifno lo el midaitchem, things that you work out from your own mind, nonsensical things that a person formulates. Okay, that's the question is, what does it have to do with al tifno lo leilim? The reason why I like to have a precise formulation is because I feel it's really the essence of the Torah. It's really the essence of the Torah, so it should be understood. You see, we said like this. I mean, the thing is that one time I gave a shiur on it, that most people, the world of most people's reality is really what we called a psychological reality. Psychological reality means it's the reality from childhood which is projected onto a broader scene, a world scene. But basically, the reality that they live with is one which is nothing more than an extension of the childhood view and the childhood perception and feelings and emotions. That's why certain things take on such extreme importance. For instance, people will guide their whole lives by what a few people will think of them. A very small radius. You take maybe 10, 20 people, the most. What these people think of them—that's very important to them in their lives. And not only if you think about it, you'll see that it's not something that's important to them, but it has a universal impact in their mind. It's like the whole world revolves around these, you know. And the truth of the matter is, as a person many times would sit back and think that if these few people weren't in the world, it wouldn't really make that much difference to the world. not what they were saying, every individual is not important. But I mean to say that every individual, of course, has a certain uniqueness. Not speaking from that standpoint. But what I'm saying is that people will overestimate to a tremendous degree what importance there is with regard to what certain people think about them. This becomes an issue of world importance. Why is this so? Because it's a carryover from, basically it's a carryover from childhood. And that's why you'll find that carryover from the childhood in the situation where the particular family is the whole center of the child's world. And what people do is, as they grow older, they extend it to certain people, but they're still involved in this type of a scene. Now for instance, that's why you have a lot of that's why pettiness, this person got a little more, if somebody became wealthy, so this will become a tremendous issue. It might disturb somebody, the envy. Why? Because small things, and what difference does it make in the framework of reality? A person would be very hard put to explain. But it hits a person a certain way. The reason why it does is because, again, he's involved in a certain childhood experience, a certain infantile world, you see. Now, the purpose of Yadus is to remove a person from this type of a mentality, and bring him into a universal, into the absolute reality. Absolute reality is reality where God is the center of reality. That Ikra Gadol Shakol Talibo, God, and this of course is through appreciation of Chachmas Hashem in Torah, Chachmas Hashem in the universe. The way the Rambam explains, the person's involved in that world, everything else pales. Everything else seems so insignificant and seems immaterial. I mean, even the overestimation of our own lives. I mean, dor holech v'dor bo, we're just one generation. Our whole existence is really very temporary. 100 years from now, I mean, the scene will be a totally different one. The world will be going on, and our individual importance will not be as great as we imagine it is right now. And one of my Talmidim one time made a good suggestion. He says, somebody's worried about something, you should think about how important it's going to be 5 years from now. If you think in those terms, then you'll see
you'll be more in line with reality, and your emotions won't latch on to the temporal, and make the temporal into such an important earth-shaking thing. You take a look at Kehelis. You take a look at read Kehelis. Read any chachamim really. Any chachamim really. Who see chachamim, see the world, see our own lives for what it really is in terms of time. In terms of cosmic time, you can forget about it. But even in terms of historic time, you'll see that if a person had a true perception of reality, was really living in the world of reality, his own small little things would take on a totally different perspective in terms of importance. But why is it that we overestimate all these little things with regard to ourselves? Because we're still involved in the world of childhood. We're not really involved in the ultimate reality. Many people feel that, on the contrary, they read Kehelis, they feel it's very depressing. It's something which is very depressing, because it's our holech, it's our bo, and you see everything is kol holech amokam echad, kol hayam in offer, kol shovel offer. They say it is very depressing. Why should we think about death, even though it's so imminent and so sure, and our lifespan is very short? So we find it's very depressing. So we try not to think about these things. I'm not suggesting that we should concentrate on these things, but I'm suggesting the fact that we can't think about these things, and we have to fool ourselves with regard to these things, shows that we really aren't on the level of reality. A Kehelis, a Shlomo HaMelech, Moshe Rabbeinu, and Avraham Avinu, the Avos, and the people who are on a higher level, they never really lost sight of these of reality. And if a person would be able to mentally be in line with the framework of true reality and his true position in the universe, he would find that his existence would be totally different. He'd be doing things for different reasons. Now, a person can't just make a quick transition, because it's not such an easy thing. But that is really the purpose of Kol HaTorah. The purpose of the Torah is for a person to be able to make that transition. And insofar as a person has made that transition from his small-minded view of himself and the world around him, the people around him, the infantile world is really more less importance in terms of establishing his value systems. See, values, true value should not be based upon what people think. True value should be based upon what in reality is true and good. In the greatness of Avraham Avinu, I mean, that was really his godless, Avraham Avinu. He was able to do that. He was able to be unconcerned completely with what anybody thought. The Chazal say, Kol ha'olam me'ever echad, v'avraham me'ever acher. You know, the whole world's on one side and he's on the other side. So people consider it like a type of courage to be against the whole world. It's not a matter of courage. It's a matter of a question of indifference, really. Really what Avraham Avinu had was indifference with regard to what people thought, because he saw the truth and he lived in the world of true reality. And a person, so far as a person lives in that world, you see, all the perfections of the Torah don't become individual perfections, but they become something which naturally emerge, because he's living in a different framework altogether. He doesn't consider it very important if he dresses in one type of garment, or if his garment is a little finer to the touch. I mean, he realizes that such a thing is out of place with reality. It's out of place in terms of the total framework of reality. And the insignificance becomes very clear to him. And great people, insofar as they're great, they live in a different kind of reality. The purpose of the Torah is to take a person out of the framework of what we call the psychological reality and into the framework of the absolute, objective reality. And really, the concept of Avodah, what is Avodah Zarah? Why is Altifnu al Ha'alilim so... So the Chazal say Altifnu al Ha'alilim means even to be involved in the novels and movies and things like that. But of course, we said that not every person, only the Chachma really. And we mentioned that you can't a person shouldn't try to just simply extricate himself and remove himself directly, completely from one world to another. Can't. So it's a long process. It's a long process. If God gives a person 70 years, it means it's a long process, difficult thing. It's not so easy. And a person has to go according to his madriga. But we have to be able to, when we study perfection, we have to be able to understand what perfection is, even though we are not really perfected. It shouldn't prevent us from contemplating it. So the concept is like this. Al tifnu el ha'alilim. See, Avodah Zarah, what is Avodah Zarah really? Avodah Zarah is the ultimate projection of a person's own infantile mind onto reality. That's really what Avodah Zarah is. But it's more than just a particular projection. Okay? If a person projects a fantasy onto reality, and he writes a fantasy tale, so that's a particular projection. But Avodah Zarah is a philosophy, a way of life. Because if you look at the primitive Avodah Zarah, so you'll see that primitive Avodah Zarah dictates, if anybody ever studied anything about the primitive Avodah Zarah, you find that every aspect of their life is dictated by what they believe to be reality. And it was a tremendous distortion of reality in their whole lives. I mean, that was even to the point of sacrificing their children, human sacrifice, and other absurdity. But the point is what is the part of man that is responsible for it? And a person cannot deny that it must stem from man's nature. And it's an amazing thing. If you take a person from a primitive tribe and you raise him in a modern society, he will be a modern individual, the same person. And yet this same person, given the primitive society, will be the most unintelligent, the most superstitious, nonsensical type of person that you could imagine, the same individual. An amazing thing. It shows something about a human being. I mean, primitive Avodah Zarah is something which, as much as we may think that we're above it, it still shows that there is something there that has to do very much with man's nature. If it could be responsible for such a manifestation of human expression. There must be something which is very basic and must be hitting something in man's nature. The people to live in such an absurd and ridiculous way must stem from some powerful source within man's nature. And that's really what the Torah says. That's why primitive Avodah Zarah is not something which is far out of reach for Western society. It's not true. It really is something which, since it has such a strong psychological hold on a person, as you can see from the study of it is something which stems from a very deep core in man's nature. If it stems from a very deep core in man's nature, there must be other subtle expressions even in the modern society. And really, that's what the Torah means when it says Al Tifnu El Halil. It means you should not turn towards those aspects of the human mind, which really are subtle expressions of a much greater phenomena of Avodah Zarah. So even though Al Tifnu Alila means is really speaking for the modern individual, for the modern person. Do not worship Avodah Zarah, primitive Avodah Zarah. That's in a society where you have a prevalence of primitive Avodah Zarah. It's true. But in a modern society, you notice where the Torah says, Tifnu Alalim. Chazal say, why Tifnu? Tifnu means to turn towards it. So it shows you what the Torah is saying is that even in the most modern society, there are subtle expressions which come from the same source as Avodah Zarah. What is that source? That source the Torah identifies as that framework of reality, that framework that we place on reality, that we project onto reality from our own infantile emotions. You see, The ultimate expression of that framework is to project the whole philosophy onto reality, and to create even a deity, which stems from that primitive source, and to make your whole life revolve around these type of projections. That's really what Avodah Zarah is. What's so terrible about Avodah Zarah? It's not simply something that's taboo. Avodah Zarah is bad because Avodah Zarah really removes, takes away from man the most essential part of his nature, which is the Tzelem Elokim, like the Evan Ezra says, the ability for a person, the Rambam, the ability for a person to enjoy and appreciate Chachmas Hashem. And the thing, that which takes a person away from the ability to enjoy and to appreciate Chachmas Hashem to the most degree, is to distort reality with his own ridiculous projections. The highest distortion is Avodah Zarah. That's why there's no progress in a society of Avodah Zarah. In a society of primitive Avodah Zarah, there's no progress. From generation to generation, you have the same exact thing again and again. Why? Because it has reached the point already where there can, where the Tzelem Elokim is functionless. It doesn't work anymore. It ceases to work. And that's the ultimate destruction of man. But of course, there are smaller degrees. So that's why Chazal say, Al Tifnu El Ha'alilah. Al Tifnu means that a person, every time you involve yourself in the distortion of reality, in terms of your own fantasies, in terms of human fantasies, then you are involving yourself, you are turning towards Avodah Zarah. Al Tifnu El Midaitan. So even though you see that, that's why when Chazal, Tosfos mentions that to read novels and things, he says, also Shabbos, he says, but the Rishon says, I don't know who is Matir even B'chol. And Al Tifnu El Alilah. The point is that anything which is, like the Rambam says, anything which is really nothing more than a person's fantasies is already turning towards Avodah Zarah. Okay, but as I am saying, a person can't just change overnight. I mean, a person has to realize that a person has to deal with himself by Sherei Shalom. I mean, on the level that he's on. But that is basically the concept. That's the concept of the pasuk. Okay, let me see. Chazal say an interesting thing. Chazal say that if a person sees that he's going to do a chait, so the Gemara says that Yikra Kriyashma. You should read Kriyashma. So what is Kriyashma? Kabbal Samal Hashmayim. What Kriyashma means that he recognizes the source of the universe, and he thinks about things which put him into a proper perspective, so that his nonsensical desires, his petty desires, become in his mind as ridiculous. But the Gemara says that if it doesn't help, so the Gemara says Yaski Yom Amisa. Yaski Yom Amisa. It's an interesting thing. Yaski Yom Amisa means he should think of what it's going to be like the day before he dies, when he's facing death. Now, what does that mean? It means it's simply that a person, if he can envision what it would be like on his Yom Amisa, would realize that many things are really very unimportant. Many things in his life are very unimportant. I mean, how many times you see people that, if you've seen, spoken to people that realize that, that they're close to death, you'll see that they're in a different frame of mind altogether. Their whole past life, which are all the things that have tremendous importance in their past life, suddenly have very little value. Mean nothing. The reason is, of course, because at that time they're experiencing a different reality. But you'll notice that Chazal said, why didn't Chazal say, somebody asked the Kasha, say, why did Chazal say it's two steps? First it should be Kare Kriyashma, and then you should be Yaski Yom Misa. Be Yaski Yom Misa right away? Why do you have to say, try this first, and if this doesn't work, so then do be Yaski Yom Misa. Go right away, be Yaski Yom Misa right away. Why do you have to give two steps? Well, what's the answer? Exactly. See, the thing is really, Yaski Yom Amisa is not really the best thing. Because Yaski Yom Amisa, when a person's Maski Yom Amisa, he becomes very depressed. The person can't live with being Maski Yom Amisa. It's like Rav Moshe said, that says people can't think about death because God gave us a Shikha Saleh from death, and that's it. You can't think about it.
All right, so the Gemara says, a certain time, a person should try to envision what it's like. But it's not a natural thing. If a person would live like that, he'd be in a state of depression. But Kabbalah, so why should he do it? Because simply, it's a last-ditch attempt. He should recognize that there is such a reality, and it will prevent him from doing it in Avera. But that's not really the most preferable frame of mind. Because there you see, in that situation, the person is not really satisfied, is not really in a happy state of mind, because he's not really satisfying his energies. His energies aren't really having any satisfaction. It's just that they're being prevented from doing something evil because he recognizes that he's going to die, and there's no this whole thing that he's involved in has no real value. But there, he doesn't have anything in its place. By Kare Kriya Shema is where a person is very happy. Ivdus Hashem B'Simcha. Really, the philosophy of Yadus is that when a person is involved in Talmud Torah, is living the proper life, he should be extremely happy. Extremely happy. Why? He perceives a different reality, but the reality does not bring with it any sadness. Now, the reason why most people, when they listen to Divrei Musar, they may be influenced by the Divrei Musar, but the Divrei Musar bring to their mind a certain sadness, because they feel that they're being taken away from the enjoyments of this world. So they feel like they're missing something. See, that's the Yaski Yom HaMisa. But that's really not the preferable way. The preferable way is that a person should not really feel be sad about the fact that he's losing his tithes. A person should be able to realize that his perception of reality, through being changed to the real perception of reality, he will be so much happier. Because naturally, if a person is living in accordance with the true reality, he has to be happier, because simply he has to be functioning more properly. And also, the perception that he has will afford him a greater enjoyment, far greater enjoyment than the perception of the limited world that he lives in at this time. So really, Shemayah, Kabbal Samach Shemayah is the preferable antidote, because it raises a person to a different level. And it uses his energies for a higher, and then place him in a higher sphere, so his energy is being used on a higher level. That's the right way. But if a person sees that it doesn't work, it's Yaski Yom Misa. It's true. Fact is that there will be Yom Misa, and it is true that on that day it's going to have very little value. When a person thinks about that, he starts to question himself, says, maybe I'm really not on the right track. So it's something which will prevent them from Misa Vera, but it's not really the most preferable approach. But, I mean, both things that Chazal is saying are, it's all one thing. Kabbalah Salach HaShemayim and removal of Avodah Zarah, it's all one thing. It's to bring a person to a certain frame of mind where he's away from the petty, away from the small-mindedness that usually engulfs a person's life, because all he sees is a very small circle around himself, which is really a false view of reality. False view. The true view of reality has to be the total reality. It has to be the total picture. That has to be the view. And the total picture is a different experience altogether, and it's a different life. If a person would keep the Mishpatei HaTorah because of a taboo, like if a person would not touch Muktzah because he'd feel that Muktzah has some type of evil spirit residing in it. I mean, definitely there's no question that this person is on the level of an Avodah Zarah. There's no question about it. The whole purpose of the Torah, is to prevent such a thing, and that's through the halachic system. The halachic system is sometimes muktzah you can't touch, sometimes you can, sometimes you mechuyev to, all different categories. Everything's worked out, structured in a way that's completely logical and complete chachma. So that since it's chachma, you cannot attach any taboo to anything in the Torah. There's nothing in the Torah that's not chachma. There isn't one mitzvah in the Torah that's not expounded upon in Torah Shebal Peh. That's tremendous chachman, understanding how it works. Anything. I mean, we're learning the yeshiva Ganav and Gazlan. Ganav and Gazlan, everybody sees how the Kinyan Geneva and Gzela, how it's structured. Whole system, whole elaborate system of most abstract, precise formulation of what takes place when a person steals something. I mean, it's all chachmas of Torah. But the purpose of the whole Torah is to raise a person to high level. So the system is structured in a way precisely that it should never be able to tolerate any taboo type of notion. If a person does, perceive it that way. It's obvious he has distorted the Torah, and he's using the Torah in the same way that an Oved Avodah Zarah would use his religion. So it's a terrible thing. It's a total distortion of Yadus. There's no question about that. Can I even go to this? I mean, as a matter of fact, I mean, the fact it's impossible to say that just the performances of the Torah per se is the objective of the Torah. That would be like a taboo idea. In Mesillas Yesharim, in the beginning, in his first chapter, the Mesillas Yesharim makes a point of that. He says that Mesillas Yesharim, you're not talking about a philosopher, you're talking about Mesillas Yesharim. Mesillas Yesharim says openly that everybody agrees that the purpose of the mitzvos is a means to perfection. I mean, there's no one that denies that. Because in Olam Haba, a person passes away, there's no more Asiyas HaMitzvahs. Mace, there's no mitzvahs anymore. But tzaddikim yoshim v'atreseim b'rashayim v'nenim miziv ha'shchina, which means that they're involved in chachma, chachmas ha'torah. Chachmas ha'torah goes on after a person dies. Gemara says that all the difficult sugyas that a person worked on in this world, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches him in the next world. The sugyas that he doesn't understand. So you see, chachmas ha'torah goes on in the next world. Asiyas ha'mitzvahs is bubble. See some mitzvahs as well. Everybody agrees that the mitzvahs are an emtzoi, are a means to perfection. But if a person will do mitzvahs because of some crazy notion, a primitive notion of taboo, which is he misses the whole point of the Torah, obviously it doesn't have much value. I would say he's better off than not doing it, because there's a chance that he'll reach he might get the idea. But in per se, it has very little value. The Gemara says, "Lo'olam yasa godem b'torah mitzvah sachila shelo lishma." This is what we're talking about, is worship shelo lishma. But even shelo lishma, why? Shemitoch shelo lishma bo lishma, the Gemara says. But you see that if it wouldn't be bo lishma, it's not. It's not so simple that it's a good thing. The only reason it's good is shemitach v'lishma b'lishma. So if it'll be b'lishma, that's the way it is. The Torah is constructed in a way that a person will go from the step from shlo'lishma to lishma. But if we'll never get to the lishma, if we'd know that he'd never get to the lishma, he'd remain with the shlo'lishma, wouldn't have very much value. That's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that the Rambam says in Hilchos Teshuva, that you should not train people to do the Torah because of Yiras Onesh. He says only for people who have very little mentality, Kitanim, or people that they really can't rise above a very low level. So he says that for those people you should train them to do the Torah because of Yiras Onesh. Okay. Or Kabbalah Schar, that they're afraid of punishment. But he says that's a very low level. He says that really a person should do the mitzvah Torah because he should recognize the great benefit that God gave him through the Torah. Maybe say Hashem Bachar Bonu Mikol Ha'amim and Asim Lanu Es Torasa. Brachot Hashem Naisan Torah. It wasn't anything. If you don't really recognize and see that this is really the greatest thing that could have happened to you, the bracha really doesn't have much meaning. You don't recognize the value. What is this? I'm saying a bracha has no meaning. What are you so thankful about? You can only be thankful only a person who appreciates and recognizes what it did for his life and how his life would simply have no value without this. I mean, just be an empty life like a behemoth. A person doesn't see that idea, then he really doesn't can't appreciate the fact that God made sure there was a Matan Torah some 3,000 years ago. If he recognizes what his life would have been like without it, he sees what the benefits that he's getting from it, then it has value, it has a meaning. I mean, it has to be a realistic thing. It's a realistic thing. People in today's society try to avoid a frustration and avoid guilt. These are all terrible things. Truth of the matter is that many good things result from frustration and guilt. A person didn't have these things, the man didn't have this, he would be in a bad situation, bad way. Person, we don't maintain a person walk around guilt-ridden all day. But the person has a sense of guilt. There's a purpose for it. It's good if it causes him to reflect and to think about the things that he's done and to change his life. It's a wonderful thing. God didn't give it to us for nothing. But just to avoid guilt is an absurdity. It's an impossible ability anyways. But the and frustration as well. Frustration is something which could lead a person to perfection. So these things are not really bad. Even though our society condemns it as bad, because our society is basically a pleasure-oriented society. If they can convert the human being into a machine that would be as it would be one that's just a pleasure-satiating device, no. They would do it. They would gladly do it. That's what they try to do.
No.
The unfortunate problem is that everything they try doesn't work. There's always a backlash. But whatever they try, what? Drugs, they try to do it, and all these things are attempts to take a person who is not perfect and to try to have him be in a situation where he could be in a state of happiness, right? State of euphoria, without perfecting himself. That is the attempt. That's the attempt. That's what society's aim is. Society's aim at large is, Hollywood scene and all the fantasies is all for one purpose. The purpose is to take man and to not to change him, not to perfect him, you see, but leave him in his imperfect state and he should be able to achieve a state of happiness. That, Yadda says, is impossible. Cannot be done. That's the philosophy of the masses and the aim of society at large, which only leads to destruction. I mean, if you look at the facts, you see the facts, it leads to destruction. But they never stop trying. Because man is very persistent. He's very persistent and he doesn't want to change himself. He doesn't want to recognize one thing, that the problem is himself. And that all these external situations that he's looking for can never help him. Because as long as he himself didn't change, and he didn't perfect himself, he can't accomplish it. I mean, it's a pasuk in the end of the Torah. The pasuk speaks in terms of a mashal. Pasuk says that lo me'ever ayid layomi, lo bashamayimi. And the pasuk gives a mashal. Shalom miyale lano ashamayimo v'gachena lano v'naseno v'naseno v'yivieno so v'naseno lo me'ever layomi. What you always wonder, I mean, our Chazal elaborate, why? But, well, suddenly the Torah is giving like a simple mashal. It's not up in the sky to go and say we're going to go up into the sky and bring it back. It's not like a simple talk. What kind of words does Torah mean? Well, Torah means like this. The Torah is expressing, elaborately expressing the fantasy of man. The fantasy of man is that there is some, the reason why he's unhappy is because there's some situation somewhere, it's me'ever layom, it's in the sky, somewhere we'll find that situation and then we're going to be happy. Torah says, no. Ki koro ve'lecha adover ma'od. It's very close to you. Beficho v'vovcha la'asasa. You should know that the only way you're ever going to achieve happiness is very close. Don't go anywhere. Just stay right where you are. Look inside. That's where it is. If you could make that change, then you will achieve it. And if not, you can go to the ends of the universe, and you never will achieve it. Well, you see, modern science is miyala lono ashamayimo. I mean, all the things. Really, I mean, that's the whole thing. That the technology is going to bring man happiness. That's the philosophy. But it doesn't seem to work. We don't seem. One psychologist said, a great psychologist said, that we haven't made 1 ounce of progress. 1 inch of progress in terms of human happiness, really. Not 1 inch of progress. See? But why is it? That's in the pasuk. Lo bashamayimi, people will not believe the pasuk. They do not believe it. They'll do everything, exert tremendous effort. But it's in the wrong direction. To change directions is the difficult thing. To change the directions is what man is, why man is suffering. Can't change. The person who works in an infantile framework, so it's guilt, or either he's in a state of guilt in which he doesn't want to have anything to do with God and the Torah when he's in that state. So he's doing an avera, so he has nothing to do with God. He's like out of bounds now. Then he's a good boy, so then he's happy to associate with the Torah. That's an infantile way to a person to serve God. That's what the Gemara says in Kedushin, that even if a person is doing an avera, yilbush shchar. You should never never be away from the concept that he's always has to. He's always using his mind. If he's doing an avera, he should do it in a certain way that he reduces the ill effects of the avera. That's what the Gemara means. So actually, what we're dealing with in this area of the Rambam, and I can tell you why the Rambam spends so much time with the Lashon, is because really you're dealing with the Yesodei HaTorah. You're dealing with the Altifnu El Halilim, which is the basic principle of Yadis, and you're also dealing with the method of correcting it. And what is the method of correcting it? That's through the Lashon, through Dibur. Because Dibur is the instinctual expression of man. Okay. The Rambam goes into Lashon Hara. And what does the Rambam say? The Rambam says, Upam Shibach Echad HaChachomim Ksav Shel Sofer Mesuyim. The Rambam says that there was a time, that one time, one of the Chachomim, this is a story in the Gemara, that that one of the Chachomim praised the writing, this the form of the letters of a certain sofer, and it was a large gathering, and one of the Chachomim over there objected, protested. Why? He told him, Plach Milashon Hara, he said. Don't speak Lashon Hara. Rotz Aloma, Ram says, Kivimashi ato meshabcho barabim atagorom lebizayam. Because of the fact that you are praising him in public, you're going to cause him to suffer abuse. To suffer abuse. Sheyesh b'em ov ov esyesh b'em son. Of course, the people that like him and people that hate him. He says, and his enemy, when he hears the praise, will be forced to talk about his shortcomings. And the Rambam says, and this is a tremendous removal from the area of Lashon Hara. Okay? It's a little hard to understand, really, why that is Lashon Hara to begin with. And why is that real Lashon Hara? And it would seem that the Rambam was including this. I mean, even like avak avak of Lashon Hara. Okay, it seems like already bordering on the fanatical. I mean, if you want to be honest about it, right?
I shouldn't say a word.
Yeah, I agree. The question that we have to deal with is why is this? What relationship does this have to Lashon Hara? That's the question we have to. What does it have to do with Lashon Hara? That's the question. It would seem when you see this Chazal, I mean. I know myself. I mean, over the years, you always, whenever you come across this chazal, you think, well, what does that do with Lashon Hara? Fine, it may be an Eitzah Tova. It's an Eitzah Tova. What does that do with Lashon Hara? An Eitzah Tova. Don't praise somebody, because if you do, somebody's bound to get up in harm. That's an Eitzah Tova. But what does that do with Lashon Hara? Kvach min Lashon Hara. You know what I mean? What does that do with the basic act of speaking against somebody? You know what I mean?
So a guy like that, that's
it. And it says, anyway. It says, matter of fact, the palm shiba chachab ben hachacham. One of the chacham knows mishabeh. Now, the pshat is like, you see, you need one definition here. What is the definition? The definition of lashon hara that we gave really was that lashon hara is the aggressive instinct finding verbal expression. See, that's what it really is. It's the aggressive instinct through the verbal. So most of man's aggression, speech, fortunately, I guess you could say in a certain way, comes out through the verbal, through speech. And Lashon Hara is knocking somebody down. Now, therefore, they say, that's why what the Rambam says about that, he says, V'hu harchoka. He says, V'zu harchoka gedola mi Lashon Hara. See? What does it mean? It means if the purpose of abstaining from Lashon Hara is to abstain from expressing the aggressive instinct in man, so then a further protection would be to try to prevent yourself from saying something that may even result
in aggression
towards another human being.
Like offense.
That's what. So in other words, the person, if you're really trying to avoid expressing your aggressive instinct, you really want to get away from it, then you should check into even the results of your actions. That's our chokka.
Would you say the guy making a speech is showing aggression?
Because that hachaka means to, that you should really keep away from any type of expression that results in the human aggression. So even though it's not really Lashon Hara, is a, but it is something which is a cause of aggression. So if you're marchik from that, you're being marchik from what? What are you being marchik from? If I am removing myself from any possibility of causing harm to another person through my speech, what am I removing myself from? From Lashon Hara. Because Lashon Hara is essentially aggression, verbal aggression. Be like this. If a person wants to prevent himself from physical aggression, so isn't it true that you prevent yourself from doing any action which might result in somebody being hit by an object? In other words, if a person, let's say we say that murder is taking a gun and shooting somebody.
Right.
So wouldn't you say that if a person takes tremendous precaution in preventing a bullet from ever hitting somebody, that that certainly is a, he's removing himself from his aggressive instinct?
He
has to be within reason. Within reason. He will not shoot in an area where there's a possibility that it'll ricochet and it'll kill somebody. So he's removing himself from his instinct of murder. He's preventing himself from being involved in murder. So therefore, if you want the same thing over here, except over here it's in the verbal, over there it's in the physical. In other words, if it's the other guy that's going to do the killing, it's true. The other guy's going to kill. But you are not removed totally from the framework of responsibility for aggression towards somebody. You're not removed from the framework of responsibility of aggression towards... Lashon Hara is the farthest expression of human responsibility for aggression. But if a person wants to remove himself from that area, he should remove himself from even side effects of which he is partially, indirectly responsible in terms of human aggression. Of course, that's why it says it's a tremendous achaka from Lashon Hara. But what I'm trying to explain is, why is it from Lashon Hara? It's only from Lashon Hara if you define Lashon Hara as verbal aggression. Otherwise, it doesn't have any shaykhus. There's no question about that. You have to use chachman evaluating the situation to know when there is a situation, when there isn't. But what Chazal is trying to point out is not a universal principle in terms of a particular case, but they're trying to point out that there is a concept of it that itself is achaka milashon hara. And the truth of the matter is, I mean, the idea is, you see, there's an underlying concept in this Chazal, and the underlying concept, the psychological principle in this Chazal, the psychological principle in this Chazal is that a person's aggression, again, is very deeply rooted and often disguised. And often, the most common form of disguise that a person has for permitting his instincts gratification when they're harmful to others is in the situation where he simply says, he doesn't know, I didn't realize, is a very good excuse. But usually you'll find that the "I didn't realize" has a reason why the mind didn't work so well in this particular case. See, many times the mind is a wonderful tool, and it can work beautifully when it has the right motivation. Sometimes suddenly it fails to operate, and usually there's a motivation, there's a reason why. What Chazal are pointing out by the fact "zu archaka gedola milashon hara" means it is the fact that it is archaka shows that if a person doesn't do that, he is catering to his aggressive instinct in some way. There is some type of catering to his aggressive instinct that's going on. Otherwise, he wouldn't have done it. See? But hachokah gedola means where a person tries to obliterate every trace of the aggressive instinct. To obliterate every trace, he really has to use. It means he has to use all the chokhmah he has to prevent any harm from everything he says. That's the case that the Gemara mentions. Okay. But it's based upon the psychological principle that the aggressive instinct of the man is not something which is just conscious, but it's something which is very deeply rooted and will always find expression, will be able to push forth in very hidden and disguised ways. And for a person wants to obliterate it, he really has to work on it in a conscious way to remove it. And how does he do that? He does that by removing himself from every possibility where he's responsible for aggression through verbal expression. That's what Chazal said.
If someone gets
What the Gemara meant was, by klach milashon hara, was that if you really want to get away from expressing your aggression verbally, you should try to remove yourself from this possible, from everything. You should look into the situation and try to measure your words accordingly. Then you'll be removing yourself from the entire instinct. That's what he meant. Klach milashon hara. If a person praises somebody because he knows it's going to cause him harm, I wouldn't say that's a vak lashon hara. That's lashon hara. At least I think one of the reasons why lashon hara doesn't, people don't have too much success with this mitzvah, is because it's not really understood. People don't understand what the issue of lashon hara is and what the benefits of removal from lashon hara are. Like I said, like a Vavodah Pasuk. The Pasuk, Davar HaMelech, puts it real. Mi Eish HaChavitz Chaim, Oev Yomam L'Ros Tov, Nitzol L'Shon Chom E'Ros. That's what I'm talking about. If a person would understand a little bit more of the Tov that he would get from removing himself from this area, then I think that he would probably be involved more in this type of a perfection. But usually a person doesn't recognize what the Tov is. And Mi Eish HaChavitz Chaim, and the person has to recognize what type of a fantastic life he could have if he would be in the world of perfection. And he'd understand that what benefit he'd have in removing himself from lashon hara. But I mean, part of it is he has to understand what the nature of lashon hara is. And many times, the problem with the musa that they give about lashon hara in the yeshivas, many times, is that they don't really explain to you what it is. So it just becomes like a taboo type of thing, you know. It's like you're not supposed to talk about the 15 lavin, I tell you about the onshim. It's very good, but the whole purpose of the Torah to tell you about how serious it is, how many lavin there are, is to show you that it's a serious thing, to look into it, to find out, to understand what's wrong with it. Not just to tell you you're going to get a lot of onshim on it. If there's a lot of onshim, it means it's a serious thing, so you have to try to understand really what's so bad about it. Once you understand it, then I think a person, if he has a concept about it, at least he could start dealing with it. I don't say a person who would be able to even stop all ramifications of lashon hara in one day, but at least he should be involved in the area. If he's not involved in the area, then it's bad. If he's not involved in the area, it means he's not involved in any person that's not involved in perfecting his dibur, in perfecting his dibur in this area of the Rambam, is not involved in perfection, period. That's it. Because this is the era.
Well,
last part, the Rambam says, "V'lashon haMishnah lo nechtam gzardin al avoseinu b'midbar ella al lashon hara." Kloma, inyan hamaraglim, she'amo ben v'yatziu dibas haaretz, v'amro leim hashalom ma elu she'atziu shem ra la'itzim v'lo avonim. Kal v'chomer. Rashi means kal v'chomer. Ma, the Kavachomer is ma of those that only spoke about the stones, sticks and stones and trees, and they were chayav and onesh, whatever they received. So a person who speaks about the gnus of his chaver, speaks about the defects of his fellow man, certainly will be chayav. Okay? If those people spoke about the land and they were nenesh, so Allah has come of a chama. How much more so is it if a person speaks about another person, bad about another person? It's a very difficult thing to understand because I mean, let's look at it rationally. The terrible thing about the Meraglim was because they spoke in a way, and they did it very intelligently. If you study through the parsha, it's a beautiful parsha. They did it very intelligently in how they did it. They worked it out. It all worked out. But what they did was they prevented Klal Yisrael from entering Eretz Yisrael. That was really what was bad. So how could you compare that to somebody just saying, speaking Lashon Hara about his friend? I mean, it sounds ridiculous. I mean, it's no Kal V'chomer. No Kal V'chomer. No comparison at all. What kind of comparison is that? What we have to understand basically is that what the mechanism is, or what kind of a mechanism of lashon hara there was with regard to the land itself. That's what we have to understand. I mean, how can you speak Lashon Hara in a land altogether? Certainly I speak bad about a person. And what kind of a mechanism of Lashon Hara is there in the land? The thing is like this. Really, when a person speaks Lashon Hara about somebody, you have to understand, what is he speaking? You see, the Rambam says before, he says, Lashon Hara is not where you speak lies about a person. He says that see Lafisha ain't Lashon Hara she is shaker aladam the Yachislo Mashalo Osa. Kizen Nikra Motsi Shemra al Khavera. That's called Motsi Shemra, that's not called Lashon Hara. So really, I mean when the Rambam says that, you wonder. I mean, why should he make a distinction? Why make a distinction? Why not just have one category of Lashon Hara, whether you're lying or whether you're telling the truth? What difference does it make if you're lying or you're telling the truth? You know, I mean, the point is it's really aggression against somebody. So if you lie, it's worse, probably. If you tell the truth, it's also bad. Anyways, why does the Rambam make a point of mentioning that Lashon Hara is not where you tell a lie about somebody? It's where you tell the truth. What's the point in the Rambam? What's so important about that? And what if we group all speaking about somebody in a bad way in one group as Lashon Hara? That's it. Why do you have to have two categories, Motzi Shemra and Lashon Hara? Why do you have to have two categories? It's an interesting thing. The Torah has two categories. It's there for a reason. Not just there as tamasa. So why, apparently, wouldn't suffice to say just speaking bad about somebody, whatever it is. Lies even worse. That would be even worse, Lashon Hara.
What is here?
I would say it's even worse. You're on the right track. The question is, why isn't it even worse? It should be one group and it should be worse. The lie should be worse. The answer is like this. The answer is that there's a unique process that's going on in Lashon Hara, which does not go on in Motzi Shemra. That's why it's divided into two categories in Torah. Torah divided, there's a reason. And the reason is there are two discrete processes that are going on. Now, telling a lie is very simple. Telling a lie, you want to destroy somebody, so you say something about him, defame him, and that's it. But in Lashon Hara, what you do is like this. The person just mentions certain things which are true about the individual, which are bad. Okay, so what harm did he do? What harm did he so what? See? The point is like this, that it's not what the person is saying that is bad. Not what the person says bad that is really harmful. Because Lashon Hara is even saying the smallest thing is bad about him. Smallest thing. But what happens is like this, that people who listen have a certain image of another person, of a person. Now when you say the bad thing, the limitation is not on the bad thing itself that you mentioned, but it has a spillover effect on the whole image of the individual. It changes the image of the individual. In other words, you mentioned two bad things about this person. You did not limit the people are not going to listen truthfully and say, yes, he has two flaws. Oh, but he has a lot of mileage. You are coloring a certain, you're painting an image of the person, but you're painting the image with these little events that you're mentioning. And that's the subtlety of the process of Lashon Hara. And that's why it's a different process from Motzi Shemra altogether. That's why it's split off in a separate process. Because it's a different psychological mechanism. Now, what did the Meraglim do? The Meraglim were very intelligent. Meraglim didn't really say, if you take a look at the Torah, that the land is so terrible. On the contrary, when they came, Bono of Oretz Asher Shlachtanu, Vehine Zovas Cholav Dvashi Vizepriya. As a matter of fact, where the Ramban says, if you take a look at the description, they didn't even say one thing bad. See? They didn't say one thing. What did they say? They said, Az ha'om ma'yoshev goros. They were supposed to tell Moshe Rabbeinu that. Supposed to tell him. He told them, go tell me what they're. They came back. Az ha'om, very strong. So what was wrong with the report? The Ramban says only one word they use. Ephes. Ephes, ki az ha'om. However. Who told you to put in however? But, now, yeah, right. But, there's one thing. That was where they were. The but indicated they were giving an etzah, a little recommendation. But if you take a look, actually, what they did was that was initially. They started off with the echas, but later they started. They said eretz ocheles yoshvei. See, then they started to elaborate. What happened with it? They said so Chazal say, famous Chazal, that really they're burying their dead that day was Ashgacha, that they shouldn't be looking for the Meraglim. All right. But the thing is,